You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Francis Albert Sinatra bringing us in on the third hour of Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. We're sending Ed Alexander to Italy for his retirement trip. So please go to GoFundMe.com and put in Ed Alexander retirement Italy, and his trip will come up. And we are all putting our, instead of sending him knickknacks and bottles of whiskey, you can still do that. He'll take whiskey. He's okay with whiskey. Please see if you can help Ed. We're paying for his trip. We work with Bon Voyage Travel. We're looking at least 5,000. We want to get to, or at 2,400. So thanks to everyone who has donated so far. Very appreciative. So let's go right to the phones. Let's go to our friend of the show, Michael Beatrice. COVID lockdown trials on. Call it COVID lockdown. I'm going to get it right. I never said it a zillion times. COVID-19 lockdowns on trial, second edition. Good morning, sir.
How are you? Good morning.
Not too bad. So here we go. I got to ask you some questions. Let's, before we get to all this other stuff we want to talk to. It's funny. I'm so sick of having these arguments. Maybe you can help me out here, Michael. How does COVID transmit? The coronavirus. Is it an aerosol? Is it in the droplets? What have we learned after all of these months?
It's an aerosol. It travels more through the air from person to person than hand-to-hand touch. Hand-to-hand touch would do it too, but it does seem like most of the community spread is aerosol-based.
Now, when they say about the mask, it's supposed to capture the droplets and you're sneezing or spitting it on somebody's face. Is that how it is, or is it floating around in the air like Tinkerbell?
Well, it's interesting because when you see people walking around outside, you would have the impression that the virus is kind of flowing through the air like spring pollen, right?
Right.
So it's not really like that. There's been some studies, and so the Lancet study was probably the most aggressive in terms of saying that the aerosol particles can spread up to 14 feet. They did an actual study on that in a hospital room, fairly controlled environment.
Right.
But the reason that you're not seeing a lot of or any mask suppression of anything around the country is the viral particles that can be transmitted. They are the mask pores are 1,000 times larger than the viral particles, and so that's just why you're not seeing any stunted growth. That's why you're seeing the activity that we're seeing all over the country, and then in other parts of the world where we've got pretty strict mask mandates, right? I mean, not just indoors, but I mean even outdoors in a lot of environments. So that's just why you're not seeing it. I mean, look at right now, New York has more hospitalizations per capita than Florida.
Right.
And Florida is, along with South Dakota, one of the only two wide open states.
And Florida has an older population than New York.
No doubt about it. Oldest in the country.
Yep. Asymptomatic spread. Where are we at on that one?
So the jury's a little bit out on that one. The overall consensus is that you're able to spread 2 days before you're symptomatic and 5 days afterwards. That seems to be the real prime time of about 7 days. And the odds are against asymptomatic spread, but I'd say there's kind of inconclusive data, and there's kind of speculation on both sides, but it's regardless whether you can asymptomatically spread, it's very low, right? It's not at all like that 7 day window that I just described.
Correct. What's going on now? What is causing the explosion right now of these viruses are going to virus. You and I both were into that, but is there something, what's happened in the last month or two?
Well, I think there's two things at play here. One, people are being pushed indoors. That is a place that it spreads. And so you've got that. So that's contributing to what we see as a fall spike. The other thing that's contributing to that, though, is that we have over 100 million people that have been infected. And so as we test a lot, we are going to get a lot of cases, especially with the amplified PCR testing that we do up to like 37 times of magnification. So you've got that at play. The other thing is, as you've got this many people that are infected, when they're hospitalized or when they die, if they're positive, they become a COVID hospitalization or death. When you've got a third of the population, minimum a third of the population that's probably positive for this, and that's not my number. Those are based on the WHO and CDC.
Now, you're not saying currently at the one time but have been infected by this since the beginning of the year?
Yeah, have been total.
All
total
right.
Number.
I don't want to get into that mainstream media thing where we're selling the total as what's going on right now.
No, kind of an aggregate total.
Yeah.
But so as you're, and then, so if somebody's hospitalized and they've had a positive test within at least 60 days, and my guess is they probably go further back, or if they're doing this PCR test that gets amplified, you could have kind of dead, non-transmittable viral particles that could show up positive. But so when you've got that, what's interesting is if you look at like Miami or North Dakota, they're one of the few places that actually separates out the hospitalizations that are with COVID versus from COVID.
Thank Jesus.
And that number hovers around a third. So you can sort of shave whatever number you see on hospitalizations and death, you can shave a third of that off right now as people being positive but not being, you know, that COVID isn't causing their hospitalization or their death. And if you want like kind of a big picture zoom out reality check, we're basically flat in hospitalizations to a year ago, and we're only at 69% capacity of all hospital beds nationwide right now. And so remember, the reason that we locked down wasn't to, you know, kill off the spread. It was to streamline it so hospitals didn't get overwhelmed.
Right.
That's never happened, and it's not happening right now.
Because that's the part that's driving me crazy. So I was asking the audience, I was trying to find it for Arizona, right? Is what in a typical December of 2019, what was hospital occupancy in Arizona, right? Because they'll say, oh, we're at 83%. We're going to push the limit. Well, what are we usually at? And some people are telling me we're at mid-70s usually.
Well, you know, hospitals are, honestly, they're supposed to be full like a hotel. They need to be at a fairly robust occupancy well into the 80s to make money. That's what they do.
Right.
And so so when you look at, you know, overall things, like I was doing some analysis on Ohio, right, and they're kind of having a blow up right now. But they're actually flat. I mean, they're completely flat to what they were a year ago. And, you know, so is California, and so are these other places that are really getting, you know, really kind of starting to restrict things again. And again, I think the question that I keep asking is, what is the end game here, right? Because if you do a 3-week lockdown and your hospitals aren't nearly full, what are you really accomplishing with all this collateral damage of kids out of school, people out of working, you're jerking around small businesses, and the government seems to think that when we get a stimulus package, that's it. That's not close to it from a financial perspective and what's happening to our kids with education.
So everyone, if you guys are just paying attention, he just told you that hospitalizations pretty much across the country are flat as opposed to last year, correct?
They're flat or down in 33 states right now.
Flat or down? Wow.
Yeah. Flat or down in total hospitalizations to a year ago. It's nuts. Chris, it is nuts right now. It's like you wonder, the only thing that matters, and the reason that politicians are doing this stuff is the only number that matters to the media is COVID, right? It's a COVID scorecard. And so if you have high numbers and you're not doing everything you can, the media is going to pounce on you. It's why they're pouncing on South Dakota right now and Kristi Noem. You notice nobody's in the news talking about Florida. Florida's wide open, but Florida's not blowing up. So they kind of ignore Florida, but they've been picking on Kristi Noem in South Dakota for a month now. And South Dakota is, by the way, peaked, and they're on their decline now.
Well, and the thing is, too, she was so celebrated. But so was DeSantis, though, in relation to holding the line on stuff. But for some reason, they really wanted to, I don't know, did they view her as someone running for president one day or vice president, and they got to go pound on her? I don't know.
I think they'd have to. You know, I did a couple podcasts with Cheryl Chumley from the Washington Times.
Yeah, she's hardcore, Chumley.
Right. So, and she and I have kind of gotten to be you know, we're in a bit of touch. And so she also did a podcast with, and she visited, met face-to-face with Kristi Noem in September. And so when we were talking before my November recording with her, we spent about a half an hour on the phone talking about her meeting with Kristi Noem. I asked her that question, and you know, I go, do you think Kristi's going to run? Like, do you think that's her game? She goes, we didn't really talk about it, but she has to be, right? And so, you know, I sent Kristi a copy of my first book, and I'm sending her another copy tomorrow. But she wrote me back, and it was very nice. And you know what I wondered, Chris? I'll ask you this question. You're pretty informed. I thought it was interesting. The media pounces more. So this is a liberal media. They pounce more on Kristi Noem than they do Ron DeSantis. And I wonder if there's a correlation to it being because she's a woman. A strong woman, and attractive. You know, I don't. So I just
like I'm telling you, I think it's because if there's anything, if I was going to go into that world of why her over Ron, it's because they look at her as more identified with Trump. Okay, and two, she's more of a threat as a presidential or vice presidential candidate. I've heard some people say, if Trump doesn't run again, you have a Nikki Haley, Kristi Noem ticket.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about Kristi Noem that's so interesting is she's smart. She's got a, you know, kind of a Midwestern, almost Ronald Reagan type of thing. She's almost got a little bit of the Sarah Palin thing going, but in terms of being a populist and homegrown, but she's tight, right? She's tighter than DeSantis. She's tighter than Trump. She's tighter than Sarah Palin was, and I think she would be very formidable.
Absolutely.
She's smart, and she is tight as a drum, and she's all business, and yet she's real. She comes off as very real.
Well, if the Republicans did very poorly with that suburban mom in this last election, Kristi's part of the maybe part of that solution for them to get some of those votes back.
You know, could be. I mean, you know, I've written a letter to Kristi to send her my second book. I'm sure, I imagine she'll write back. But the final comment that I made was, I hope to see you in Washington soon.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to break. I got there's a lot of meat on this bone today, so I might keep you for another two segments. All right, buddy?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Michael Beatrice, the COVID-19 Lockdowns on Trial author. Second edition is out right now. Of course, it's Iron Man. It's Ozzy's birthday today. So here we go. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30, The Voice. This is what you get for Ozzy Osbourne's birthday. There it is. Ozzy and Miss Piggy doing Born to Be Wild. This is how we celebrate his birthday. Who knew? Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. Hopefully Michael Beatrice hung up after listening to that. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, Chris, I've got a question for you.
Yes, buddy.
This is off COVID, so this will be just a quick sidebar.
Yep.
If you could see, since you guys play such great music on here, if you could see any band or artist in any era live, who would you go see?
It's either going to be King Crimson or Yes in the first 4 years of the 70s.
Wow, that's a deep cut.
That's what I do. I'm a progressive rock guy, but probably the King Crimson with John Wetton, Bill Bruford, David Cross, and Robert Fripp. And then
wow.
Then of course the Yes lineup that had Bill Bruford in drums, which would be the Fragile lineup, Close to the Edge lineup. So that'd be it. Have a nice day. It's done.
Very impressive. Very out of the box.
That's what we do. What do you think I was going to say, Donnie and Marie? Come on. Sorry for you Donnie and Marie fans out there. We're hanging out with Michael Beatrice. The book is called COVID-19 Lockdowns on Trial, edition number 2.
And did you get your copy?
Not yet, so... You know, this is the U.S. Postal Service. They're very busy right now doing something. But it'll be there. I can't wait to see mine and Ed's name in it. So that'll be fun. Let's talk about... So the CDC just said that the 14-day quarantine is no longer necessary. What did they revise it down to?
They revised it down to... 7 officially, I think 7 to 10 is what they said, and I think 7 seems to be the number.
Yeah.
And then that kind of coincides with the whole 2 days before, 5 days after that we talked about in the first segment. I think that's a little bit of progress. I think Fauci's come on around in the last few days, and some of his interviews sort of softly saying kids should be back in school. So it does feel like some of that stuff is coming around. And you know what? That's good, right? I mean, we can sit and complain that it took 8 months to get there. But
well, it drives you crazy that Redfield's been saying put the kids back in school in August. This jackwagon finally said, maybe we should send the kids back to school in December.
Yeah, you know, it's for all the things that really frustrate me and for all the discussions I have about masks, you know, the education one is the one that really is indisputable, right? I mean, the mask thing, the data doesn't support it, but logic, you can see how logically people can think they're kind of helping the cause. And so, but the education thing is just, it's irrefutable. There's no data point in the world, not in the world, that has associated hospitalizations and deaths with schools opened. And so, and we've got enough schools open around the country where it would be major headlines if there was a blow up. There just isn't one. And it's criminal. It is criminal what's happening right now.
Well, and it's funny, now, again, December, NBC News just does a big story about how African-American, Hispanic, and poor kids are getting obliterated this year with only doing online. We just had this horrible story come out of San Joaquin Valley County of a young 11-year-old who shot himself on his Zoom class while it was going on. I mean, this is a sick thing we're doing with these kids.
Well, you'll notice when you get a copy of the book, if you look at the very first paragraph of my intro, I got a call from one of my closest friends who lives in San Francisco now, and she and by the way, she's a liberal and progressive. She proofed my first draft, but she wasn't on board. Like, she was supportive of the lockdowns. She called me up in tears, and I go, "Oh my God, like, you know, what's wrong?" She goes, "I won't say the company because it's a major company in California."
Right.
But she said, "My CEO's son committed suicide, and he was 16. He suffered from depression. Should have been in class, and he committed suicide in their home, and he felt completely isolated because they moved to California in this year, 2020. Ugh. Didn't know anybody, and she was just in tears. She said, "I am done with these lockdowns." And then, you know what she did? She and her husband, he's a doctor. They just up and left. He's a research doctor, though, so he can do it on this remote. They just left. They came back to Texas. I live in Dallas. They came back to Texas for 6 weeks because it's just intolerable in California right now.
Again, it's the I don't know if we're gonna have an honest, real back end analysis of the damage of the lockdowns. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you know, I get one of the questions I get asked a lot, even in my social circles, is, you know, what made you, you know, sit down and write a book so fast? And what I even would explain to my son is people remember, you know, it's kind of like he would ask me, how do you think Trump will be remembered in history? And I said, probably not well, because history is remembered by the people that write about it. And I think that most people would, you know, academics and people would write probably not very flattering things. And so I wanted to throw my name in the hat to be one of the people that documented what's happening with the lockdowns.
Amen. All right, we're going to go to break. I got a hard news break here. We'll bring you back for one more segment, if that's okay.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Awesome. We're hanging out and catching up with Michael Beatrice. He's always bringing good information with data behind it. We like real data. If you have a question or comment, 790-2040. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, let's get back to it. We're hanging out with Michael Beatrice. He is our COVID-19 lockdowns on trial friend. Mike, tell me about curfews. The city of Tucson decided they were going to do a mandatory, you're going to love this, 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. The county will follow soon, but one of their little hospital friends, when asked who wanted to do 8, was asked, "Oh, what about, what's the difference between 8 and 10? They're like, "Well, we don't know."
I didn't know about the curfew until I was listening to the news before I came on. And you know, it's hard to imagine because the data coming out of, like, for example, Southern California, there's no real, like, transmission source coming out of bars or restaurants. I mean, it's not even measurable. And so you wonder why they're squeezing some of these businesses. And then when you look at, I don't know if you saw the protests, the stuff that was going on in Staten Island, New York last night.
I did not.
Yeah, I mean, there were 1,500 people outside of this restaurant from this guy that declared a quote, autonomous zone for his. But this is how loony some of these rules are. Is you've got this business in Staten Island that's closed, and if you look, I'm not exaggerating, a block and a half away, they were explaining this, a block and a half away was open. So you could go eat in a restaurant a block and a half away in Staten Island away from a closed area. I mean, like, just how nuts is this, and how cruel is this to these small businesses with these crazy rules?
So I always like to talk about, because when you do a 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock, right, they're going after bars, right? And So Cara Crist, who was our unenthusiastic director of health for the state of Arizona, she was put on the stand because the bar owners are suing Ducey over closing them over the summer. Okay, and some of the restrictions, because he did. I don't know if you can put this in your next book. Doug Ducey did ban dancing in Arizona. You can't dance because of the Rona. So you can't dance with your wife or your girlfriend. Illegal. So
crazy.
I assume he has health people with a 6-foot yardstick, and he puts it in. I want to see 6 foot of daylight between you two, right? It's like the Catholic nuns, but. So anyway, she was on the stand, and Professor Werman from the ASU Law School is representing the bar people, and he asked her, hey, what data or science did you have to make the decision that gyms and bars were, more of a super spreader of the Rona? And she said, oh, we didn't have any. Oh, thanks.
There's no. By the way, the gym thing was funny because has always been funny to me because when we locked down gyms, my son and I were going mountain climbing, which we do every summer. We take a couple of trips, and so when we closed down gyms in April and May, I was starting to panic, like, because a lot of training goes into that,
right?
And so I'm writing this book. This is back April and May, and doing this research, and I'm like, there's no data anywhere in the world that ties gyms, to some spreader event place location. And so I just, some of the craziness that goes into this, like, it's almost like we've lost our logic, right? I mean, if you zoom out of this, how many, you follow this stuff, how many, when you look at places like Costco and grocery stores and Walmart and places like that, how many of those have been associated with breakouts?
Zero.
Zero. And so what makes you think that and with fewer than 5% being sourced in Southern California with bars, zero with gyms, like, where is this craziness? And then when you look at the hospitalization data, I don't know if you read that article I sent you.
The burden of proof one?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually covered it on the air last week.
Oh, good. So you're sort of comparing, these open states to South Dakota is getting hammered, right? I mean, they're on the decline, but they had a tough November, but no tougher than a lot of other states when they went through their peak. Everybody sort of gets their turn, and this craziness that lockdown states, that locking down works when you compare it to these controlled environments, these control states. I just can't even believe where we are.
I think that, so we had Ducey had his press conference yesterday, and of course, the people like in this town wanted him to just, lock the state down again. We don't have a statewide mask mandate, but most of these towns and cities have done it anyway, so it's an equivalent of a 91% mask mandate. And he didn't give them what they wanted, and they lost their minds yesterday.
But the thing is, I mean, everybody's, the media. And these are all people, employed, but probably don't have kids, home falling behind. But what is the end game out of this, right? I mean, that's what I can't understand is when you're looking at, are we looking at, 15 months of straight lockdowns or restrictions until, a high number over, majority of people get vaccinated? Is that what the end game is? Because it's not to streamline hospitalizations because we're not at near capacity. So I think we've lost clarity on why we're locking down versus, sort of the Scott Atlas, the Barrington Declaration approach of basically insulating those segments that are vulnerable. We know who those are. It's not a huge part of the population at all. It's a small sliver. And everybody else kind of get on with life. I mean, you could make a good argument that you don't have huge indoor events. For example, maybe you don't fill up, you know, the Superdome with you know, a sellout crowd. It's indoors, right? I mean, you could make that argument,
right?
And that's not the sword I'd fall on. But you can't make the argument around some of these restaurant restrictions and schools being closed. You can't make that argument. And I don't know where we keep going on this. It so becomes circular.
So think about this, right? So the sports leagues with outdoor stadiums that can't even fill them up 40%, right? And so look at the – so in this county and this health department, when there was a Trump event here in late October, okay? 12,000 people, shoulder to shoulder. They were all freaking out, super spreader, right? And even with whatever they think they call contact tracing, even the county health director said nothing really came of that.
Nothing's come of any of those events. Nothing really came of, you know, there's been some speculation, which has been the poorest data. I did a bit of analysis on this in the book and wrote one of the more sarcastic things I've ever written. But, you know, the Sturgis motorcycle rally event in August in South Dakota, you know that got talked a lot about, 500,000 people there. Nothing happened from that. You know, there was an article that came out recently that they said Minnesota traced, this was a headline article, Chris, Minnesota traces 80 cases to the Sturgis motorcycle event. And I'm looking at that like, that's a headline, 80 cases. That's by the way, that would be iffy, but that's 500,000 people, and Minnesota's blowing up right now.
Right.
Like, I mean, Walmart probably had more cases, you know,
than the Sturgis motorcycle rally. Absolutely.
Single Walmart.
Let's go to the phone, 790-2040. Let's go to Al on line 3. Al, you're on with Michael Beatriz. What's up?
Well, good to hear what you're talking about, gentlemen. And this is one of my questions. How come we never get statistics of how many people got over it and survived instead of the doom and gloom all the time? I got to get back to work because it's windy. I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you, guys.
Michael?
Yeah, good. So there is data. You know, if you look at the if you look at both the COVID Tracking Project website, if you look at Worldometers, they show the data on cases and the number of people that have recovered. And that number, I can tell you based on samplings, we're at about 99.75% survival rate. And by the way, those numbers matter. There's a huge difference between 99.75 and 99. So what the denominator is very important to not get carried away or undershoot it. But it's very high. It's statistically zero. If you're under 25, it's zero. If you 0% fatality rate statistically. I mean, there's a handful of outliers, but
right.
It's very, very low. Really, if you're under 60, I mean, really, like, you know, like 99.9 whatever. And if you're elderly, frail, if you've got a couple, two or three comorbidities that you're aware of, hypertension, and severe diabetes, severe obesity is the number one under 50 cause of COVID-19 deaths. They prompt strokes. It's just not really at risk. So, but the reason, as it gets back to this whole media thing, right? The media hypes up cases. They hype up cases in these surges. They never contextualize the data. I doubt right now, and I've talked to some doctors about this. I'm in touch. I've got some feelers on around the country. In most places of the country right now, if we didn't know COVID existed, minus a few hospitals, we might not know we were experiencing anything different than the flu. And part of the data support, again, big picture, we're only at, you know, we're flat, basically flat in most places to last year, and we've got 30% open beds. So it's
Well, last week you said we were at 8.9%. Right before Thanksgiving, you were saying that 8.9% of hospital beds were COVID patients. Is it still around that number?
It's up to like 12 now.
Okay.
So it's rising. I mean, you know me a little bit. I'm not a COVID denier. I do think if you are if you're vulnerable, like my parents, you should keep a low profile. I believe that.
Yeah.
But again, you got to remember part of this is that there's a lot of people in hospitals. Like my brother's a surgeon. He did two surgeries last week on COVID patients, but he's a urologist. He doesn't operate on COVID related things. They just tested positive, and he was just telling me, those are COVID hospitalizations, he goes, but they weren't sick with it. They just tested positive. There is a bit of that going on out there. So, again, you got to shave off about a third of the big numbers that you see in hospitalizations and deaths because they're more with, not from, COVID.
I had a family friend. We all have these stories. Well, a lot of us have these stories. Who a friend of the family, the young man died in a horrible motorcycle accident. Okay, and he's still, when he got to the hospital, he was alive. They tested him for COVID. Right, dies in the hospital, and then they got the death certificate back, and it said COVID.
You know, one other interesting thing is that all-cause mortality a month ago was plus 12% in the country. And if you remember, I wrote a little bit about that in South Dakota, comparing some of those states.
Sure.
We're down now. So all-cause mortality is down to plus 10%, meaning excess deaths are now 10% above normal. They were 12. What we're seeing now is more COVID-related stuff into other ailments, meaning they're not necessarily excess deaths dying from it.
Right.
We're also seeing a little bit of a catch-up, and we're seeing this in Sweden too. We're seeing a catch-up of people that died earlier that probably would have died this year statistically, and so it's sort of catching up this year. And so it's really kind of blowing some of the people, me and some of the other people that follow this data, that we're dropping 2% is huge in a month this late in the year. That's a monster number. And it's very interesting to see that maybe it's not being quite as impacting as it was, and how dangerous the lockdowns are.
And we're seeing that the regular flu is down, right?
It's almost unmeasurable in the world. It's almost unmeasurable. It's very wild. From March on, February on, the statistics around the world, you see very few flu deaths. It almost went down to, you know, I want to say zero, but it's a very, very low number from what it was. The reason is COVID has cannibalized all those flu hospitalizations and deaths, and part of that is because they include probables. And a flu hospitalization has a look and feel like a COVID hospitalization, and when you can include probables, and there's a decent chance those people might have even tested positive, you're seeing a lot of cannibalization on the flu from COVID.
Gotcha. Let's get one more question from a listener, and then we'll let you go on to your day. Mike, you're on with Michael Beatrice. What's up, buddy?
Okay. Are you familiar with I think you mentioned the Great Barrington Declaration.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. And I think it's a really good path to follow to get things back to normal. They're talking about schools and universities should be open for in-person teaching, that because the people who are not vulnerable, like the kids, should be allowed to resume normal life. And you're not hearing any of this. And the actual fatality rate, according to their numbers, is 0.2%. Not, you know, it's not off the charts here. If you would, you said you had mentioned that. I think you should mention it a little bit more. There's like 43,000 medical people who are supported this thing. So,
you know, everything Mike and I talk about is pretty much in line with the Great Barrington Reef. I'm thinking of the Great Barrier Reef, Barrington Declaration.
Yeah, but it's funny. But this, you know, there's a lot of information here that apparently our leaders need to know about.
Mike, you're right, and to give you a little history on this, how funny some of this is, going back to March, is when the first Imperial College model came out, it predicted that 2.2 million deaths in America, if you guys remember that.
We do.
And about a week later, it was Dr. Sunetra Gupta from Oxford who came out and said, this is BS. All these model inputs, these assumptions are wrong. We don't think it's going to be nearly this type of an infection fatality rate, and based on our projections, we think this thing is much more widespread than has already been discovered, in which case we're already through it, meaning getting through it.
Right.
And so she refuted that. This was back in March. You got to remember this timing, how rapid. The very next day, Professor Neil Ferguson from Imperial College changed his model and said it went from 500,000 deaths in the UK. He reduced that to 20,000. And then said, and most of those people would probably die this year anyway. And that was Sunetra Gupta who challenged that, got him to back down, and she's really the backbone, along with two other doctors from Stanford and Harvard. I can't always pronounce their names real fluently.
Yeah, the guy from Stanford, Jay, we're trying to get him on the air very soon. So we're working on Jay right now. So Jay and his first, last name starts with a B. All right. Yeah. The other guy ends with a B, Michael Beatrice. Hey, thanks for all that you do, man. We appreciate it. And keep being on that wall, man. We need you.
Sounds great. And enjoy your book when you get it.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
COVID-19 Lockdowns on Trial is the book. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. Oh, Ozzy covers Crimson. There we go. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. Local news. That'll wake you up. That doesn't wake you up. So thank you, Tom, for spoiling me with a little Ozzy Crimson version there.
I think it's going to become the Callahan double whammy. I'm going to get famous for that somehow.
I'm okay with that. Keep pushing it. I like it. Love it, love it, love it. Tomorrow's show, next two shows are going to be pretty busy. Tomorrow we have food. We're going to start off with Congressman Schweikert. He didn't call in today. He's calling in tomorrow. So Schweikert in the first hour. Then we have Barbie from the Sausage Shop. We just played her with Hannah Titi on KOLD in the second hour today. They have a lot of stuff for your holidays. It'll change your whole holiday cooking, shopping, and what you make on Christmas Day and other things. So, and also if you're doing little quiet parties, you know, just a few friends. Then we have Mark Van Buren will be here. He originally wanted to do top 10 hockey movies for Callahan, but we couldn't find 10 really good ones. So it's going to be winter sports movies. So
that's fair. I'm going to work on a list.
Okay, so that we're going to do that tomorrow. Then we have Tim Sandifer, lead lawyer for Goldwater Institute, about their lawsuit with Pima County on the Worldview deal, where that's at. I'm going to ask him a question. I want to ask him about the governor saying he can just shut people down after two strikes. I want to see where we stand legally with that, and Tim hopefully can answer that for us. Then we have Representative Andy Biggs, Congressman Biggs will be calling in. And then our Filthy Pirates coming in with the coffee at the end of the show.
Yar.
They are our new coffee sponsor, and so we will be knee-deep in Filthy Coffee Pirate.
I am very excited.
Yeah, I know in September it's, what do they call that?
National Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah, I annoy people all day on that one, only once or twice, because it really does get old fast.
It does.
It's fun.
It does. The other one quick story I want to get out, this is from Terry Jo Neff at the Arizona Daily Independent. There's a 10-member committee of the state legislature from their Committee on Arizona Military Affairs and Emergency Management, co-chaired by Senator Michelle Ugenti Rita. She's been on the show before, and Gail Griffin also. They are going to have a discussion about the Governor Ducey's emergency powers are now under review by their legislative oversight committee. The testimony will be put, some of the testimony by Elon Werman. So Professor Lerman is an attorney and a professor at ASU Law School. And he's the one who's actually representing the bars against Ducey and the state on shutting them down. And Professor Werman, said, I'll be testifying about the fundamental separations of powers principle and how the governor's interpretation of his emergency powers violates those principles. And I'll suggest some ways the legislature can amend the emergency statutes to clarify that don't give the governor as much power as he seems they think they do. So anyway, lots of meat on that bone, as we like to say. Tom, have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Zach's live at the Oral Valley. He's incubating something today. And then Bill Buckmaster's got Steve Christie, I think, on later today. Wake up.